Welcome to the Indianist Podcast, a show about leaders of Indian origin who have overcome challenges and worked with dedication to ultimately achieve success. By telling the stories of the defining milestones in their journeys, we hope to inspire others to learn how they, too, can succeed in their pursuits. Here's your host, Sanjay Puri.
Welcome to the Indianist Podcast, where we explore the inspiring journeys of global Indian diaspora changemakers. I'm your host, Sanjay Puri, and today we have the privilege of speaking with Dr. Pradeep Khosla, a visionary leader in higher education and technology. Dr. Khosla is currently serving as the 8th Chancellor of UC San Diego, a position he's held since 2012. With a distinguished career spanning over four decades, Dr. Khosla has made a significant contribution to robotics, cybersecurity, and engineering education. Prior to his role at UC San Diego, he spent 30 years at Carnegie Mellon University, rising from assistant professor to dean of the College of Engineering. A thought leader and strategist, Dr. Khosla has not only excelled in academia, but also has made his mark in the business world as a consultant, board member, and entrepreneur. His journey from India to becoming one of the most respected figures in American higher education is truly inspiring. Pradeep, it's an honor to have you on our show. Welcome to Indianness.
Thank you, Sanjay. It's a great honor to be on the show.
Wonderful. Pradeep, we have a global audience. These are people, in many cases like you, people who want to be like you. And part of our mission is to inspire them from your life journeys. And the way we do that is to go right to the beginning. So let's really go right to the beginning. Tell our listeners, where were you born? Tell them a little bit about your parents, and then we'll go deep.
So I was born in Amritsar, which is one of the cities in Punjab. But I never lived there because, as is the tradition in Indian families, the daughter goes to the parents' house to deliver the first child, and I was the first born. So she went to her parents' house, which is in Amritsar. And I might have stayed there, I don't know, maybe 10 days, 2 weeks, but I basically was brought up in Bombay until I came to the U.S.
Okay. So born in Amritsar, who never got a chance to taste the amazing food that Amritsar serves, etc., but was brought up in Bombay. Tell us about your parents, Pradeep, a little bit about your parents.
Right. So both myself, like I said, I'm a big fan of Amritsar, by the way. I go there a lot of times right now. So both my parents are deceased right now. God bless their soul. But I was number one of three kids, and all three are boys. My number two brother is a year and a half younger than I am. And the number three brother is 13 years younger than I am. We never quite could figure that out, but in Indian family, we don't ask those questions. So the childhood memories are one of living in Bombay, and basically live in apartments, right? So I went to two schools in Bombay. I went to St. Anne's Catholic School up to grade six. And then after that, I transferred to another Catholic school where my mother was also a school teacher. So she was a school teacher, and that, so the memory of her being in the school and the memory of being part of that school is really burnt into my head. It was both good and bad.
Of course. Go ahead.
So at age 18, and like everybody growing up, you either become an engineer or a doctor in those days. This is, I'm talking 1973 now. Those were the only two choices. And I basically did not care for being a doctor, which is ironic, and I'll come back to it later. So I said, okay, I'll be an engineer. And actually, I wanted to be a physicist. I wanted to be a nuclear physicist. And so I went to college to study physics. And then after first year, my parents started insisting that I take this IIT entrance exam to be an engineer, because during those days, there were a couple of suicides of nuclear physicists at the Bhabha Atomic Research Center. So they did not think I'd get a job. So they wanted me to have a good career. So I take this exam, this IIT exam, after my first year of college. And the input was only 1,200 students. I remember this clearly. 1,200 was the input of all five, across all five IITs. And my rank was something like 1,082 or some ridiculous number. And so when I go to the interview, they said, okay, you know, we'll give you like mining engineering, naval architecture. And I said, look, I don't want any of this. So I just walked away. And when I came home, I remember my parents being highly upset because they said, how can you just walk away? And I did not know then, which I came to know much later, that selection in the IIT is both talent-based and random simultaneously. Because out of 100,000 kids taking the exam in those days, at least 3,000 were equally qualified. And to be in top 1,100 was a random chance. Does that make sense? So one wrong question and you would not be in the top 1,100, right? So anyway, that was the obnoxious or the self-confident part of me. So I said, okay, we'll do it again. So next year I take it again. And this time my rank is like 130 or 140 or some, really, I could do whatever I wanted. And I chose to pick, I chose IIT Kharagpur. And I remember coming home where my parents were really upset because they said, why would you go all the way east? So Kharagpur from Bombay, just so you know, is exactly as far as you can get away from Bombay. I mean, there's nothing, nothing is further than Kharagpur. So I said, look, Bombay is family. I don't want to be here. Delhi is family. My uncles and aunts, I don't want to be there. Kanpur is grandfather. I absolutely don't want to be there. Chennai, Madras is too hot. So Kharagpur was the only choice. So that was my rationale.
Well, lot to unpack there, Pradeep, if I may just, go back to some of those things, because you talk a lot about, indirectly, you talked about the role of chance, you talked about the role of randomness, because our listeners, you know, need to understand some of those things. But just want to go back a little bit more. Your mom was a school teacher. Obviously, you went to a Catholic school. What was dad's profession, if you don't mind
my
asking?
My dad was, initially, he was in service, and then he started his own business. He was like a store, you know, doing interior decorated products. Nothing spectacular. I mean, just like make a living type of store.
Okay. In Bombay.
I come from a middle class, maybe even slightly lower than that, but educated family, but not very well to do, right?
Okay. And when you were growing up, you know, this is pre-IIT, you spent a few years first in this Catholic school and then later on in another school where your mom was the teacher. Tell us a little bit about memories, because those are formative years also, because, you know, people need to understand those, how those influences people who are having kids and things of that nature.
Right.
Talk a little bit about those years.
So the Catholic school was a school run by nuns and priests, like literally in those outfits with the church outside.
Yeah.
Right. It was a rather tough school in terms of discipline. And every time you cross the line, you'd get what was called like cuss. This was like a thin cane. The father would pull out of his sleeve, and you'll get like 3 or 4 or 5, you know, depending on what his mood was. And I had become pretty adept at accepting this punishment because I used to be always on the edge of something or the other. And my parents would be called to deal with this child. But having said that, they could not find something significant because I was always at the top of the class. So my educational outcomes were really good, but I was also on the cutting edge of causing mischief in the school. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And the same thing was true even when I moved over to the other school. They thought by moving me to a different school, I would be better. She would keep an eye on me. But I don't think she was very successful. Maybe a little bit successful, but not completely.
So you moved to the other school because mom was in that school, Pradeep?
Yeah, mom was in that school. And it was in the same local area. It was like maybe 2 miles apart. It was in Malad. So the first school was Malad West, and this school was Malad East. So it was actually the same area. And her mind was, hey, you know what? We'll go to school together, you know, because we had to take a local train to go from where we lived to the school. It was like one stop away, but it was either like a transport bus, but not a school bus, like a public transport bus or a train, right?
What about the academics there? You said you were doing fairly well in this first school. You did pretty well in the second school too?
Yeah, so second school also, you know, I'd be, I was always like top three in the class. You know, they would rank you every,
of course.
At the end of every year, you get a rank. So clearly, my mother's pride was tied to my accomplishment. And in her mind, like, how could you be a school teacher, in this case, Khosla teacher's son, and not be the top of her class? And my view was, why do I want to work hard to be top of the class? Number two is as good as number three. You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
And the same philosophy was with me, even in IIT, you know, where I would always be, I would, most of my grades were A's, but a third were B's, only because I was always on the edge of getting an A and not work. Does that make sense? I would, because to get an A with 80 points is different than getting an A with 95 points. So my view was, I'm not putting that extra work, because after 80, nobody can tell the difference. And every so often, I'd miscalculate and I would get like 75, and then I get a B.
Oh, that's very interesting. What about friends at that point? First school, second school, any friends that you made there?
Yeah, so I had like, you know, most of the friends, like the long-term friendships were around where we lived, were in my neighborhood, people, the kids I played with, the kids whose homes I went to. But they did not go to, unlike the U.S., these are all private schools. So people did not go to the same school from the same neighborhood, right? So I did not have many friends from that neighborhood that went to my school. There were some, but the long-term friendships were basically in the neighborhood where we lived.
Right. And when you were at home, was mom doing helping with homework, or were you on your own? Are you self-driven, Pradeep?
You know, I honestly don't remember ever asking help from either of my parents for my homework. And again, unlike the U.S., there is no notion of homework, right? In India, growing up, you go to school and you have one midterm and one final exam, and that's it. There is no half of your grade assigned to homework. So in that sense, there was no homework, right? So, but they would be on my case all the time, hey, you're not studying enough. So I was one of those people who would study like the day before the exam. And again, like I said, I'd get like 82 points at their view. Wait a second, you should be getting 95. That's too much work.
That is. And we're going to come to that a little bit in terms of how you were trying to, well, I won't call it gaming the system, but working the system to your advantage, because obviously there were some things that were going on in your mind. You had a brother who was 3 years younger than you.
A year and a half.
A year and a half. And then there was a 13-year gap. So was he close to you?
Yeah, we were, you know, like growing up as boys, closeness was how much we fought.
Of course.
Right? I mean,
the quantum of fight.
Exactly. So we would be fighting with each other, you know, doing wrestling matches for people and stuff like that. We are very close now, but again, it's a, growing up, the closeness was like how much we fought.
That's true. That is true.
And we fought a
was
lot.
He the same school?
He went to the same school, yes. We'd go together, we'd come together, right?
Wonderful. So when you were in school, then you decided to go to college. Which college did you go to before you we went through this saga of IIT? I want to understand.
Yes, I went to Parla College.
You went to Parla College.
Yeah, I went to Parla College. Right.
Why did you go to Parla College? What was the decision making in terms of going to Parla?
To me, it was in, like I said, Ville Parla, which is about when we, at that time, used to live in Goregaon, which is about three stops from where we were. It was actually a very good college without having to travel for an hour. So the other good colleges were in Churchgate, which is like literally an hour away. Right. So this actually was a good, how should I say, and it was a good technical college. It was a good trade-off between high quality education and not wasting the time travel.
Okay. And the first year that you spent at Parla, how was it? How was your experience?
Actually, it was a good experience, but I did what every college student at that time would do. Like I, again, remember, the criteria was midterm and final exam. And there was no, in this case, it was mainly a final exam. And there was no notion of attending classes, attendance, none of that. So my attendance record was very poor. My record of seeing movies was extremely good. My record of sitting in restaurants, drinking coffee and tea and chatting with friends and watching the crowd go by was really good.
Well, a caveat to our listeners that generally most people don't skip school and become chancellors of universities. There are exceptions like Pradeep, right, Pradeep?
I don't know about that. I enjoy my time in college. But the reason I could do it is because I had this bizarre confidence that at the end, I know I would do well in the exam. And that was the criteria to decide how good I was.
So you were a good exam taker. Is that a fair statement to make?
Actually, I think I was a good exam taker, yes.
Yeah. And that's just something that was innate to you, that you just knew that you could get to that point.
Yes, somehow it worked out, right? I mean, looking back, of course, I kind of wish I did not just rely on my exam taking skills, that I was also learning as much. But I was a good exam taker.
You're a good exam taker. Well, that's pretty interesting. And then...
And that's the same thing with IIT exam, right? So like people, people get ruffled in the IIT exam. But when I went the second time, I knew that if the answer was more than five lines, if in five lines I had not come up with the answer, I was on the wrong path. And just that insight, right, forces you to not waste your time and spend two pages trying to solve a problem and not knowing that you're on the wrong track. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To move on to the next is what you're saying, right?
Exactly.
The opportunity cost, and sometimes in life,
right.
Example that you can't solve every problem in life, solve the ones that you can rather than wasting what you
can't. And I had an inkling of when I knew I was on the right track or not, right?
You did. When you were looking at IIT, obviously, Pradeep, the first time around they gave you, you were 1100 or something, and they gave you this, and you know, this is the quirks that a lot of our listeners don't understand about IIT. It's based on your ranking. You get arbitrarily assigned, and we've had a lot of IIT grads who have come on our show, and they talk about this arbitrary system that exists. You just were confident because anybody, and to our listeners who don't know IIT, anybody would have, in Pradeep's case, would have taken that thing and said, hey, I'm in IIT and that's all that counts. What was going through that mind? What was that incredible confidence that you had that next time around I would crack it, because you might not have? Then what?
So first of all, the confidence in this case was because of my ignorance. Because if I knew then what I know now, I would have taken it. I would not have walked away because it did not make rational sense to walk away. Okay, but it was my lack of knowledge that led me to that decision, right? And secondly, I really wanted to do physics. I mean, I did not want to do engineering. I really wanted to do physics, especially nuclear physics.
Yeah. But Pradeep, when you walked up, let's say when this whole saga the first time was happening, was there input from mom and dad that, hey, this is crazy, you shouldn't do it? Or
no,
some,
they were not
some
there.
Well-wisher.
So what happens there. Is, so you go to this, I went to from home to IIT Bombay, which is where the selections are happening. Yeah. And when you show up, they tell you, okay, here are the departments available in these places. And the only, and by that time, all the, And every department going in was like 30 students, 25 students. So by the time I got there, based on my rank, I only had these departments like naval architecture. Nothing wrong with naval. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to make your listeners who are naval architects. It just was not my interest. Mining, not my interest. Agriculture, not my interest. So, so I just said, I'm done. I'm walking away. And that's it. I mean, you have like literally 30 seconds. I mean, you're there. And if you don't pick, then you walk away.
And you walked away.
Exactly.
But then, Pradeep, I'm just trying to understand. Then you went back to Parla?
Yeah, second year.
Second
year. Intermediate science, right.
So what was your thought that, hey, because if you hadn't cracked it, you would have just gone through and got a degree from Parla?
I would have gotten a Bachelor of Science in Physics, right.
Physics. Wow. And so what was the second year like? You good?
Yeah, it was, again, the same thing, right? I mean, but this time I was a little bit more serious. So what I did is I joined these. So there are preparatory classes, right? I don't know, something called Agarwal classes, right? So I joined them during 2 months in the summer, and they kind of do a crash course in preparing you for an IIT exam. And to me, that was perfect. So that worked out well.
So that kind of helped you.
Right.
So that from 1100, you came down to 130, 150.
Yeah, something like that. Well, actually, 121 or something. Yeah, it was actually a really good rank, right?
Yeah. And so then you got what you really wanted, right?
Right. So then I could pick nearly what I wanted. So I had to choose a department or profession, like a major, and I had to choose a location. So the location I chose was Kharagpur, and the major I chose was electrical and computer engineering. Again, because at that point, again, I think misinformed, but somehow ended up with the right choice. I thought that was the closest to physics that one could get without being a physicist. Well,
that's
it turns out that mechanical is probably closer to physics than one would get. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I take that.
So, again, for our listeners, you didn't pick Bombay or Mumbai, Powai, too close to home, Delhi too close to home, IIT, Lucknow.
Kanpur was grandfather.
Kanpur was grandfather.
No way.
So you said, let's go to Kharagpur as far away.
And Madras was too hot.
Madras was too hot.
Growing up, Madras, I mean, is the southern, literally the southern tip of India, and it's like hot and humid.
Right.
And that's the impression. So I said, okay, let's go to Kharagpur.
So there was no, for our listeners, there was not like a scientific analysis done. It was basically, but sometimes in life, you end up in the right place at the right time. So.
And I had no idea where Kharagpur was. Actually, I didn't know what.
You've never been
was.
To Kharagpur before?
Nothing. I had no idea. Remember, this is 75.
Right.
There's no internet. There's nothing. I mean,
and
India is not even that advanced. So it's not like we had pictures and books. You see what I'm saying? So that nothing. That's just noodles far away. I said, okay, we'll go there.
Awesome. So you show up in Kharagpur. Tell our listeners, how was that experience? Because now you went
really
from Parla. Parla, and now you're amongst a lot of smart people at the same time.
Right. So actually, it was, you know, you talk about like certain things like burnt in my memory. So I remember, so Kharagpur is from Bombay. At that time, it was a 36-hour train journey, okay?
Oh, my.
Like literally 36 hours. It is like, I think about nearly 1,800 kilometers away. It's literally the eastern side of India, right near Bangladesh. Near Calcutta in Bangladesh, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I had never left home. I was always a homegrown baby and my parents. So time comes to leave or to prepare to leave, and my parents want to come with me. And I said, no, either you board the train or I board the train. I mean, the two of us are not going to be on the same
train.
Looking back, I wish I had not done it, because if my kids do it to me now, I know how I would feel, but I did not realize how my parents were. But this, you know, this is, you got to be burnt to learn, right? That fire actually burns you. So anyway, so in the end, I boarded the train. They didn't come with me. And it was great. Like, I fumbled my way through, you know, 36 hours later, made friends on the train because everybody was going to the same place on that train.
And then how was the experience of being at IIT, Pradeep? Talk a little bit about the...
So, you know, my I have like really good memories, right? So IIT, Kharagpur also at that time was really notorious for ragging, what you would call hazing here.
Yeah.
Right? Bad enough that people would give up their program and come home. It was that bad. And that lasted like a month. And somehow, I don't know, it kind of worked out okay for me. I mean, I did not, it was not pleasant, but it was not that unpleasant either. Being hazed is not a pleasant experience, right?
Yeah.
But after that, the Kharagpur was like, how would I explain? It was literally being in a forest. It literally was a forest, okay? Yeah, Kharagpur was known for its longest train station in the country. It was the British barracks. That's where the British soldiers lived. That was known, that was Kharagpur, and there was nothing else there. And then there was IIT. So IIT was made in this Hijli jail. So the jail was converted to this IIT. I don't know, maybe a 1,500-acre campus, a beautiful campus in the woods. I actually thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, there was nothing to do there except like go to the library, go to class, study, or go sit at a tea stall and discuss politics. Right? Wow. It was amazing.
Yeah. What were the academics like?
So the IIT, the joke is that getting in is difficult, getting out is easy. So the academics were actually very competitive, right? Because these are all, remember, so I was in this class, electrical engineering, and everybody's rank was either slightly higher than me or lower than me, but it was all in the same cluster. Like there was nobody with rank 500 who was in that class. Does that make sense? Yeah. So everybody was clustered around that rank. So they're competitive people. And again, my view in IIT was the same as in college. And again, as I look back, I wish it was not the same way, where I did really well, but I was neither at the top nor at the bottom. I was like in the top maybe 25% of the class. But I worked hard enough to get enough A's to be in that category, but not all A's.
You're saying, looking back, you wish that was not the case. Why do you say that, Pradeep, for our listeners?
Because, you know, I would have, I don't know, I might have done a little bit better, got more A's. I don't know how it would change my life, but I somehow think, so for example, we had to take a course in English every semester. It was based around a book or two that we would read. And I refused to go to any of those classes. I don't remember going to any classes. Now, looking back, I think knowing a little bit more literature, knowing a little bit more sociology would not be a bad idea. But I made up for it because I'd spend my time in the library. So instead of going to class, I'd be in the library. And at some point during my career there, I was an expert in Freudian psychology. I mean, I read just about everything I had to read.
Wow. Pradeep, how about friends during that time at IIT?
Oh, yeah. You know, you build good friendships because you're living together, you're eating together, three meals together. You're not always going to class together. But yeah, there were good friendships I built out there.
You built out
and there. That was a good part of, right. So it, like of all the experiences in my life, I would give anything to get those 5 years back because the experience was just spectacular.
Wow. So Pradeep, we talk about inflection points here and we'll talk about the other ones in your life. You think not taking the first offer from IIT and going back again, do you think that was an inflection point?
Oh, I think so. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, at least to me, it looks like one. You can never predict the path you did not take, where it would take you. But clearly, I was not interested in that path. So I don't know it would have taken me anything anywhere good.
Yeah. Because, you know, again, learning lessons. So sometimes, you know, Pradeep was gutsy, courageous, or in some cases,
stupid.
Or stupid to follow what he thought he liked. And sometimes it doesn't seem that easy, but it worked out pretty well for him. And I think those are, again, lessons learned. Pradeep, when you were finishing, what was towards the end of IIT, what was going through your mind and for about the next steps? What tell our listeners a little bit about that.
Yeah, so, you know, at that point, I don't know, more than half or 60, 70% would go to the US to study. And for me, I just wanted to stay in India and do a job. It was not clear to me that research is what I wanted to do at that point. But once I took up a job, my first job was Tata Consulting Engineers in Bangalore, and the second one was Siemens in Bombay. In 2 years, I had figured out that this is not how I wanted to spend my life, which was basically doing run-of-the-mill computations, nothing interesting, nothing challenging, nothing exciting. So at that point, I decided to apply to the US for higher education. Now, the problem was that my grades were good, but for a top university in the US, what they do is they typically would take one or two people from a single IIT and who would be very highly, they would have very high ranks or very top grades. I was near the top. I was not in the top. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I knew the likelihood of getting into a good place was not going to be great. So, but I, nonetheless, I still, so I applied for this scholarship called INLEX scholarship. And again, dumb luck, I got it. It was a one-year scholarship to do a master's. And I had a choice to go between Yale, Caltech, and Carnegie Mellon. And of those three places, I picked Carnegie Mellon because what I really wanted to do was, what I was doing with Siemens, which is designing protection schemes for powers for the power grid. How do you protect a power grid from surges, right? So there are multiple ways of doing it. And I was using the computers at TIFR to do it. And I always knew that computers would become important in controlling the power grid. Or I always believed that. I don't know if I knew. So, and this guy at Carnegie Mellon had that as a specialty area. So I go there and I show up at his office and he says, hey, the brochure you got is 3 years old. I don't do that anymore.
So oh, sure.
I said, okay, what do you do? He said, I do this new thing called robotics. I said, okay, I'll do that. So this is 1982, and Carnegie Mellon was just building a robotics institute. So that was, again, a ground floor. I said, okay, I'll do it. I don't know what it is, but I'll figure it out.
Oh, wow. So, Pradeep, another very important point for our listeners. I mean, now Carnegie is one of you're at UC San Diego, so I wouldn't say, but one of the top in robotics.
And absolutely, no doubt about it.
Yeah. So, but this was not something you had planned. You show up with an old brochure, the one that you did is out, and this one is new. So the role of, is it, would you say luck, chance, or, but you also said, I'll do it because you didn't have any other option, or you said, it sounds interesting. This is again from decision-making for our listeners, Pradeep.
But so first of all, I think dumb luck has a big role to play more than people think. I'm a believer, but I cannot control luck. I cannot make it happen. It just happens to you. So I've been fortunate that way. In the robotics case, I think I was not, I had scholarship only for 1 year. Okay. So in that 1 year, I had to figure out how was I going to support myself in second, third, fourth year because I wanted to do a PhD.
Right.
right? And I did not have enough time to say, oh, I don't really want this. I'm going to go somewhere else because that would waste a year. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah.
So in my head, it was clear that either I had to do something at Carnegie Mellon that interested me, or I would not be in the U.S. beyond 1 year. And so it sounded interesting to me at that point, robotics, automation, you know.
So yeah.
I said,
was there a thought that you could flip to Yale or Caltech, the admissions that you had?
No.
Had? There was not an option.
No, no, you could not do that. Once you are an institution, you get the visa for that institution. You cannot just get up and leave. And that's part of the problem with being a foreign student in the U.S. I mean, you are, in some sense, limited.
Limited. Okay. So Pradeep is there. Now he's raised his hand on robotics without realizing that it's going to be a transformative thing for the present and on the future. How was that experience? And the professor you had, how was he?
Right. So the first advisor I had, it was not a pleasant experience. I mean, he was, in many ways, I would say abusive.
Really?
He was a typical old school professor that if you, like, I'd go to his office and I'd say, you know, professor, I'm not going to use his name. I've done this. He would take the papers and throw it across the desk and say, this is crap, you know. So after about 3 or 4 of these conversations, I said, enough of this shit. I'm not taking it. So I went to the department chair and I said, I want to change my advisor, which typically people don't do. And I had found a really good guy who also have. So I switched my advisor for my PhD.
After how long?
After 9 months, I finished my master's in 9 months, and then I switched.
But you waited for the master's to happen.
Yeah, because my in this case, what I did is I got a co-advisor for mechanical engineering, so that kind of modulated the situation. And then my department chair said, "Hey, just switch after towards the end in your PhD." So that's what I did. So again, the same thing. I was looking for somebody who'd support a PhD stipend for me. So this guy said, "You know what? I have this new technology called direct drive robots, and I need somebody to work on that project. I don't have anybody." I said, okay, I'll do that.
Pradeep, there is something I want to go back, because for our listeners, it's important. Your advisor was abusive. There are some people who are in a work situation that might be tough, but some, you said, I'm not going to do it. In some, many cases, they're afraid because of careers, etc.
Right.
Talk a little bit about what went through and what advice is it for people when, let's say, if you're in, whether it's your PhD advisor, master's advisor,
right,
or your boss or supervisor.
So in this case, so there were like 4 of us that joined the same year, okay, to work with him. He had no funding of his own, number one. And then the 4 of us, he was equally abusive to all 4 of us. That was his tough love trying to teach us how to do work. But the problem was that he was only abusive, and it was not teaching us to do anything except avoid it, right? And we would all commiserate. So in some sense, not being the only one gave me some courage. And but I was the first one to, as they say, to bell the cat. So I went and said I wanted to change advisors. My other 2 friends, they never changed the advisor. They finished with him. And looking back, I'm sure they are not happy that they finished with him.
Yeah.
But look, you got to find somebody who has got a project that is of interest and that has got money to support you, right? It's doing PhD those days. Was actually for foreign students was on one hand easy to get in because the American students did not want to go get a PhD in engineering. They wanted to do an MBA. So the foreigners would be like more than half the PhDs were given to foreigners. Yeah, actually, that's the case even today. And then the funding was ramping up, and at Carnegie Mellon, robotics was hot. So we had my 4 years at CMU. I mean, I had no shortage of money. I had more money than faculty members did. because my advisor was so well-funded. I mean, the new one, he's actually a world famous guy. He's like a very famous Japanese guy, very famous right now. And I had more money than I could spend. I mean, like, he had given me an open checkbook. Like, do whatever the hell you want.
Wow.
I had technicians working for me as a PhD student. So I finished my PhD literally in less than 3 years.
Wow. And that was a good experience, Pratik?
Well, it was spectacular. But again, so that's one of the places where I changed my work habit from doing the minimum. Mm-hmm. Went into the other extreme. Now I'd be working 24/7.
Okay.
Right? And amazingly, so if you now look at me now, you would mm-hmm. never predict that there was a time when I was like this flippant student who would like do the minimum. So I worked 24/7.
What made you change? Is just internally just something you said?
I think, first of all, I wanted to not spend my life doing PhD. I did not want to spend like 6, 7, 8 years, which was normal then. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Secondly, PhD is not a function of just producing work. I mean, you got to solve an interesting problem. You got to really be engrossed in the problem, right? Mm-hmm. And what it takes is to really be living the problem day and night of your life to do a good PhD. So, and it just became a habit after that.
Well, that's very cool. So after you finished your PhD, what happened, Pradeep, in your journey?
So at that point, you know, you're looking for a job. So obviously, I want to be a professor. So I applied to jobs. And during those 4 years, besides having a research assistantship, I also had a teaching stipend because I wanted to teach later on. So I figured getting teaching experience is going to be a useful thing. So I would offer to teach, and then they would give me a stipend to teach. So the person I taught for really took a liking to me and adopted me as his mentee. So this person was in circuits. I was in robotics. What connected us to was love for teaching. So he was a great teacher, and I think I was pretty good too, at least at that point. So when I finished, I was applying for jobs. He said, why are you applying? Why don't we keep you here? I mean, we are the best place in the country. We are growing in this area. But CMU had a rule that they typically would not hire their own students. So he talked to the department chair, who then called me in and gave me a little lecture on how not to expect anything. Most likely I would not be hired, but they'd be happy to interview me. So I said, fine. I said, you make up your mind, and I'm also interviewing other places, and I'll make up my mind. When I have all the offers, I'll figure out where to be. It may not be this place, so just so you know. So and I think I interviewed 8 places, and I had all 8 offers. And then I chose to be at Carnegie Mellon.
Wow. And you were there for a long time.
I was there 30 years, from a student to assistant professor. I was a full professor, I was a university professor, I was a chair professor. I had reached all the highest ranks of professoriate. And then I was department head, dean, right.
So you said I've done enough, that's why you moved from there?
No. Actually, I became a faculty member in 86. And in 6.5 years, they were putting me up to be a full professor. So I would have been one of the fastest promotions to full professor because, like I said, I was producing work, and I was like, really, even in my research, I was addressing problems which were risky problems to address, as in you could spend 2 years and get nowhere. But to me, that was the game I liked. I wanted to really make a difference. I would address like difficult, challenging issues. And amazingly, I was kind of successful. So I was about to become full professor. And then this guy from DARPA, the director of DARPA, was there. And I was briefing him on the work I was doing. And he says, yeah, how much do I give you every year? I said about 750,000. He says, you know, come work for me at DARPA. You'll get like $30 million a year. You can do whatever you And I'm thinking, okay, that's been a good experience. So I talked to a couple of my mentors and they said, yeah, go do it. So I said, okay, I'll go to Tarpa. So I spent 3 years out there. I spent 3 years out there. And that's when I was working on the drone technologies that are in practice today. I mean, we developed some of the basic methods and the algorithms. We developed the basic technologies for autonomous robots, autonomous cars. I can go down the list, like collaborative manufacturing. So it was really good, great experience. But it was actually a life-changing experience for me. And I realized that I wanted to do more than just research for myself. I wanted to like build organizations, build programs.
Wow. And then after DARPA, Pradeep?
I came back. So now that's one of my regrets. At DARPA, when I left, I was going to come back, but I had the opportunity to go to other universities, a couple of companies as like the lead manager for worldwide software development and automation development. And looking back, I wish I had gone to a company then, but it's too late. I made the choice to come back to Carnegie Mellon, which, don't get me wrong, it was really good, okay? Mm-hmm. But the path not taken, I can imagine, might have been a different path and a little bit more differently exciting. So I was the director of an institute, department head, and dean. And I was dean for 8 years, and this opportunity came along. So I said, so at that point, so the reason I never left Carnegie Mellon was I did not want to give up my research. Because once you leave in my business with a lot of laboratory infrastructure, you lose like 2 years or 3 years. And then you don't get the same quality student. And Carnegie Mellon Robotics, I was getting the best in the country. I mean, like the best students would come to MIT, Carnegie Mellon, Stanford, you know. Yep. So I did not want to. And as a professor, you cannot underestimate the role your students play in your work. I mean, they really define the quality of your work. It's not you, it's the students who are doing it for you, right?
So that's true.
So in 2012, this comes along. And at that point, I said, you know what? So by then, I had achieved just about all the accolades that one would want to get. Like I was a member of the National Academy of Engineering at age 49. The typical election age is 65. I had achieved some major awards. I said, you know what? I'm now going to go really run an institution and see what it's like. And again, I interviewed at UC San Diego thinking, hey, this is a practice interview. These guys have to be crazy to offer me the job because I've never been in a public institution. I was only private. But so I show up and a day later they say, you know what? We want to hire you. So, okay, I'll go there. I'll come.
Oh, my gosh. Oh. So I think one of the lessons for our listeners is that Pradeep has taken a lot of chances. Well, I wouldn't say chances, but when opportunity is presented, you take it and say you'll make the most of it. And I think that's a big lesson because sometimes people are afraid of doing that, Pradeep, because I want to just hone in on some of the lessons learned. Pradeep, we talked about the second time you went to IIT being an inflection point. We talked about you moving from your one advisor to another. And maybe moving to DARPA was also an inflection point.
The biggest one.
Biggest one is, would you say, is DARPA for you?
Oh, absolutely. It completely changed about how I think about life and how I think about myself and what I like and what I don't like. Yeah, completely.
Really? Can you just expand briefly for our listeners? What happened that changed it for you?
So at DARPA, so the way it works at DARPA is you define a big problem. Mm-hmm. And you pitch it to the director, and if the director says it's going to make a difference to the military and to the country, then they'll say, okay, here's $30 million over the next 3 years for you to address this problem. Now, to address this problem, we build a team of people, mainly from top universities in the country, companies. So you assemble a team to address that problem. So you become like the advisor of advisors. Right? And my team had some spectacular people, both from companies and universities. I mean, people way more senior than I was. Like, when I went to DARPA, I was like 30, let's see, 94. I was 37.
Wow.
Okay, I was one of the youngest people out there. I mean, like, everybody around me was like 55 and above. So it was a great experience. I learned from these senior people, like, taught the senior people on how to just not, how to just imagine the world without thinking that you know all the answers. You know, experience should teach you how to evaluate a solution. Experience should not create the solution.
Yeah.
And typically what happens in our life is we use our experience to define a solution, preordain a solution, rather than mm-hmm. having a set of options and evaluating them.
That's
true. You see what I'm saying?
So don't let experience determine the solution is what you're saying.
Or be the impediment. I mean, use it to your advantage, but you cannot use it to constrain your thinking.
Constrain your thinking. That's very important. Pradeep, you've dealt with countless students and even entrepreneurs, you know, in DARPA and others. Are there one or two common traits that you see in those who succeed? This is, again, for our listeners, if you were to look or think.
So, you know, I always tell people I make up for what I don't have in my intelligence in my hard work. So I think criteria number one is you should not be scared of putting the work in. If you're afraid and don't have the commitment to put the work in, I don't care how smart you are, you may not get to utilize your talent to the best.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing, one can never underestimate the role of dumb luck, right? And dumb luck is basically another way of saying don't preordain a solution. Don't assume something is bad just because it was bad for somebody else. I mean, that somebody else had a different situation, you have a different situation. Times are different, right?
Yeah.
So I've always been open to like looking at situations differently. And the third thing I tell people is you gotta be creative. I mean, problems in the world don't change. So if you just take in your personal life, in a family, we all families have the same problems. And they do the same, make the same mistakes again and again and again. And the only way to fix it is to look at that problem differently and see, you know, is there a different way of thinking about what the issue is out here? And that actually has benefited me a lot. I mean, so there were two ways people have described me. Like one of my DARPA colleagues said, he says, you are what I would call broken field runner, which means, you know, in football, when you are in there and you're looking for that gap.
Yep.
You see what I'm saying? And he says, you see that broken field way faster than anybody else can see. So, which I think is about accurate. And the other guy, like at UC San Diego, some of my friends, one of our regents says, you know what? You are an inside the box, out of the box thinker. So what they're telling me is that you think out of the box while being within approximately the guardrails of policy and...
Wow.
So as chancellor, I have to be within the guardrails of policy. I cannot just be a renegade. I'm an activist chancellor, but I cannot be a renegade chancellor. Two different things.
So, Pradeep, for our listeners, hard work, be creative, don't underestimate dumb luck. Those are some of the important things that I think are very, very critical, right?
Exactly right. And you don't need more than that. I mean, seriously.
Yeah. Pradeep, believe me, I could go on for an hour. I have like a zillion questions, but we also are respectful for your time. Just very quickly, we'll do a quick lightning round. One-word answers from you.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Pradeep, books or podcasts for you?
I'm sorry?
Do you prefer books or do you prefer podcasts?
Actually, I prefer books.
Okay. Are you a morning person or a night owl?
I used to be a night owl, but now I go to bed at 8:30. So I wake up at 6 o'clock. So I'm a morning person.
Okay. Fiction or nonfiction? What do you prefer?
Nonfiction.
traditional classroom or online learning?
Online. And sorry, traditional classroom, not only traditional, but with chalk and board.
Chalk and board. Okay. All right. Pradeep, our podcast is called Indianness. What is your, if you were to define Indianness, what is your definition?
You know, for a long time after I was here, actually, this is more than just a lightning round. I tried to absorb myself or be absorbed into this culture, which I think I was reasonably successful. But as I've grown older, I realized what is Indianness about me are the cultural traits that stay with you that you don't appreciate, and the way you treat your guests, the way you treat others, the way you treat elders, the way you think about life. So that is what I call Indianness. It's not about having Indian habits. It's about having Indian culture. Properties.
Well, that's a great answer. Cultural definition of Indianness. Pradeep, one person who's been the most influential in your journey? One.
This person who was the provost when I was an assistant professor and he adopted me, Angel Jordan, and this other person, Ron Rohrer, who was influential in getting me hired at Carnegie Mellon. So these two people. Literally have defined my career in a very, very good way for me.
I hope both of them are listening because that's high praise coming.
One passed away, the other is, I don't know if he's listening, but he's yeah.
Okay. Finally, Pradeep, Nike's tagline is just do it. What would be Pradeep's personal tagline?
I would say like, go for it. I mean, you know, it's the same as just do it. It is like, don't be afraid, just go for it. You know, see, if people get afraid and people don't understand that most of the outcomes are not life or death outcomes.
Yeah.
And we make them life or death for no good reason.
And as Pradeep says, he raises his hands. They say robotics, he says yes. They say, yeah, you know, DARPA, he says yes. UC San Diego, he says yes. And who knows where else Pradeep is going to say yes to. So as Pradeep said to our listeners, don't be afraid, because I think the fear, what Pradeep is saying, the fear is what keeps us scared, I think so. Pradeep, your journey from India to becoming a pioneering figure in American higher education technology is truly remarkable. And, you know, your insights on leadership, innovation, and are been so inspiring for our listeners, and thank you for sharing your experience.
No, this is great. Look, you know, you can give all the credit to me, but I can tell you that what people don't understand is to go from a nobody to the top of a public institution in this country speaks to the greatness of this country and the opportunity it has afforded me and people like me. It's easy for all of us to talk about the deficiencies of this country, but this is the greatness. So, and I think we should all recognize that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Pradeep, for being on the Indianness podcast, and look forward to continuing for our listeners, future listeners, our discussion. Thanks so much for being
here.
Will do,
Sanjay. Thanks a lot. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay. You bet. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Indianness podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and subscribe to enjoy future inspirational stories.